Hi, everybody. This is Mike Smith from The Complete Works. I just wanted to let you know the episode you're about to hear was kind of overrun with audio difficulties, technical issues. Let's just say the internet is not our friend in this episode. A lot of cutting out. I tried to edit around it as best I could, but you're going to probably hear some stuff. So, you know, just keep that in mind as you enjoy the episode. Hopefully enjoy the episode if those issues don't bother you. And hopefully we'll see you around next week. All right. Thanks.
All we know is that he was missing in action for a month. For a while, we didn't even know who he was.
Welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCriscio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good, how are you?
Good. There was like a slight pause after
I freeze?
Did you freeze? I thought you were just like contemplating whether you were a fellow cageaholic.
No, I did not pause for dramatic effect. I was just waiting for you to say the introduction. So that's cool. That works out.
All right. Awesome. Today, Mike and I will be discussing 1984's Birdie, a Vietnam War-era drama directed by Alan Parker. An IMDb plot synopsis reads, after two friends return home from the Vietnam War, one becomes mentally unstable and obsesses with becoming a bird. Now, that sounds kind of silly, but it's actually...
Yeah.
That plot synopsis is a little... like, it seems vague, but that's actually like... a pretty good representation of what this movie's about.
Yeah, surprisingly, that is literally what the movie is about.
Exactly. Now, I think Birdie bears at least a passing resemblance to another film we've discussed in this podcast, Racing with the Moon. Because both films are about two friends, one of which is played by Nicolas Cage in both films, and their experiences as they lead up to going off to war. But while Racing with the Moon stops as the boys leave to fight World War II, Birdie is more interested in the aftermath of how these boys act after having lived through the war. The film frequently cuts back and forth between the past and present. We see how Al and Birdie become friends and what their lives are like, and that informs the scenes where we see Al trying to talk to Birdie in the hospital room. Now, Cage is pretty much the lead of this movie, or at least the co-lead. I think Matthew Modine plays the title character Birdie, but Cage, I think, carries most of the film for at least the first half.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially because Birdie is mute for like a half of the film, effectively.
Yeah, and Modine, I think, does a lot of really good stuff with his performance in that. Like, he's very expressive as Birdie. But Cage is carrying a lot of this movie on his own. Mm-hmm. And as the film goes on, it does start to focus more on Birdie's psyche. So you get the inner workings of a kid who's always been weird and a little bit unstable. And the pair of them give great performances. And I'd say this is probably the most we've seen of Cage in a film since Valley Girl.
Yes. Probably, yeah. It's definitely like the sheer volume of Cage is equal, but the magnitude is much greater in this, to use weird terms for some reason.
Okay. What do you mean by the magnitude?
Well, I mean, in Valley Girl, he's kind of playing like a spoof character of an archetype, basically.
Right.
And in this, he is a fully fleshed character, I think.
Yeah. Okay. I can agree with that. Birdie stars Nicolas Cage as Al Colombato and Matthew Modine as Birdie, and also features a cast that includes John Harkins, Sandy Baron, Karen Young, and Bruno Kirby, among others. Sandy Baron, as soon as he showed up, Sandy Baron played Nicolas Cage's dad in the movie. And I saw him, and I was like, he looks really familiar. And I was, like, trying to place it. And about halfway through the movie, it hit me. And, like, I snapped my fingers, and I was like, oh, my God, that's Jack Klopas from Seinfeld.
Wow.
So
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, Jack Klompas is the guy who sells Jerry the pen in the
right,
in the fan episode.
Right.
He appears in a few episodes. So that was kind of cool. And Bruno Kirby was kind of big in the 80s. He was one of the main characters in City Slickers. A couple other things. The film was written by Sandy Kruf and Jack Baer and was based on a novel by William Morton. Birdie was directed by Alan Parker, a prolific director who doesn't get talked about as much as he should. His work includes Fame and Pink Floyd The Wall. Those are movies he did before. Yeah, those are movies he did before Birdie, and he would go on to direct movies like Mississippi Burning and Evita. Birdie was screened at the Cannes Film Festival, and it won the grand prize of the jury, which is essentially second place in the competition.
Wow.
Yeah. And also,
how have I never heard of this movie before?
Yeah, apparently I hadn't really heard much about it either, but I was looking it up, and it's apparently one of Matthew Modine's most more famous roles.
Wow.
I think he's mostly well known for his role in Full Metal Jacket, but, this is a couple years before that. And this is like, if you look at his Wikipedia page, like, you know, how it lists like the most significant roles a person's in, like at the top of their page, Birdie's up there. It's like that and Full Metal Jacket are like the two.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to say too, that this one thing doing this podcast is exposing me to not only as much Nick Cage as one person can handle,
right,
but also some awesome movies that I've never seen and probably would have never seen.
Exactly.
And this, I think I would include Birdie in that so far.
Yeah, definitely. And also one other thing about this movie, as you mentioned before we started this podcast, Peter Gabriel did the score of this movie. Peter Gabriel of Genesis fame and of his own solo career, which is also neat. And I think the score is actually a big part of what makes this movie work, I think. You know, there's one scene in particular that I thought was a perfect combination of like visuals and music, and I'll get to that in a little bit, but yeah, I thought that was his score was really great. And I was researching and he was like taking tracks from like his own albums, like, and just kind of repurposing
them
for the movie. Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, we pointed out too, like we said before, that this is the second movie so far that we've done Nicolas Cage that has a big time, you know, musician. We had Stuart Copeland for Rumblefish.
Yes, true.
Peter Gabriel for this.
Yeah. Maybe that's a trend. Maybe we'll see maybe we'll find out that I don't know, Phil Collins did the score for Face Off or something.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and then we'll have to petition for a supergroup of Cage composers.
Yes, yeah. Stuart Copeland from Rumblefish, Peter Gabriel from Birdie, Phil Collins from Face Off, and
you're just going to pretend that's true.
I'm going to pretend that's an actual thing. And also, Spinal Tap for Con Air. Like, that would just throwing that out there. That would be pretty awesome.
Time will tell. You have to listen in.
Yeah, we won't know until we get there. Yeah.
But enough about that. What about this movie, Mike?
Yeah, exactly. So, Mike, what did you think of Birdie overall? I mean, what was your overall takeaway from the movie Birdie?
So my overall takeaway from Birdie was I was surprised that the movie kind of dealt with PTSD and the effects of, war and stuff on these guys. And I thought it was interesting the way they had the structure of the film set up, like having Al visiting Birdie in the mental ward or wherever he was.
Right.
And then having the story be told through flashbacks of him trying to reach Birdie in his current state. So he gets to see the foundations of their whole relationship and how, you know, things have progressed for them. And I thought that was an interesting way to have us care about their relationship, because the movie starts and he goes to visit his friend in the mental ward. We don't like, whatever, you're just two guys. But then the way having the flashbacks, I thought that was an interesting way to set that up.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the flashbacks inform both characters. I think you get a sense of like where they came from and how much their friendship has evolved over time. And it seems like they haven't seen each other since they left for war. And so this whole thing is like kind of come back and like, so it's like therapeutic for both of them throughout the movie, trying to get Birdie to, you know, talk about the person again.
Yeah. I mean, when it starts at the outset, it's definitely Nick Cage. It's the story is told of Al's relationship with Birdie.
Right.
But somewhere around the midway point, it switches to Bert. Like all the flashbacks are about Birdie, basically.
Yeah, it becomes it becomes about like
through Al's point of view.
Yeah, it becomes like about Birdie's psyche, really, and like how he's always been like really weird and different, and has like, and you can tell like from the first time you see Birdie in flashbacks, like he's super weird.
He's just perched in the tree.
Yeah, and that's played for laughs a lot at the beginning of the movie, but as it goes on, it becomes darker and like a little more intense as it goes on. Do you have any like specific scenes you thought were like really good or like really funny or like anything like that?
I think the big scene that stuck out to me the most was probably, I don't even know if it is a dream sequence or not, but after prom, when Birdie... we get the point of view of a bird, basically, and it's flying over his neighborhood.
That is the scene I was talking about when I said it's the perfect
with the score,
like, score and the visuals. Yeah,
yeah.
Because that scene is Sam Raimi cam going.
it is. You're right.
From the perspective of the bird, just like traveling through the entire city, and the score from Peter Gabriel like really adds a lot to that scene, I think.
Yeah.
As well as the voiceover from Michael Modine as Birdie. I think he has a lot of really like intense stuff happening there.
Yeah, it's a very transformative moment for him. And, I mean, there was glimpses of that kind of stuff in this movie, but that was the standout scene for me.
Yeah. Yes, that was the like, scene where it's like, okay, he's officially... Even before the war, it seemed like he was, like, kind of
before he goes to war.
Yeah. Even before the war, it seems like he's like off his rocker a little bit and like is obsessed with flying and becoming a bird. And then the war kind of triggers something in him and he adopts this like regressive, like shell kind of thing. But I think the movie also, does a really good job of just like showing that they're regular teenage kids, you know, like I think it's really funny at a lot of points. I like the fact that they play La Bamba anytime they get into mischief. I thought that was pretty good.
Did they do it more than once? Somehow I only noticed it, or I only remember it when they're dog chasing. Or
they played La Bamba a total of 3 times throughout the movie.
Somehow I missed those. That's awesome.
Yeah, they play it. They play it during the dog catching scene. They play it time that Birdie tries to fly. Not the first time, but when the first time he has the flying machine.
Oh, okay.
And then they also play it during the end credits.
Right.
Which, by the way, I think the ending of this movie was amazing.
Oh, my God. I was so not expecting that. It was so great.
What are, like, the... Like, at that point, the movie had become, like, a full-fledged drama.
Yeah, and, like, really serious and dark. Yeah. And I was ready for that to be the end.
And the movie ends on, like, this hilarious...
Just like wink like, to the camera.
Wink to the camera. Like just this really funny joke cuts to credits immediately. So basically, throughout the movie, Birdie's trying to fly. And every time he tries to fly, Al is like, you can't do this. Stop it, basically.
Yeah.
And the first time you see it early in the movie, he like jumps off like the building in his like bird costume.
Right. He falls. Yeah.
And this like sort of echoes that scene where he's like about to jump off the building.
Right.
And in the original scene, he falls and like breaks a bone or something. He hurts himself.
Yeah.
But he like lands in a pile of sand. He's ultimately fine. At the end of the movie, like after Birdie's like cured and they like reconcile and they decide to like escape and like run away.
Yeah. Escape from the institution.
Yeah. The guys chasing them. They like run out onto the roof and then like Cage is like closing the door and Birdie like goes over to the edge of the roof. Cage is shouting at him, "No, Birdie, no, we can't do this." And then he jumps and for a second, like Cage and the audience are both like, "Oh my God, Birdie jumped." Like And
he's dead.
It would make sense if that was the ending of the movie.
Yeah.
Based on everything we had seen. And then Cage, like, runs over. And there's, like, another roof, like, 2 feet down.
Yeah, just a shorter roof.
And Birdie's down there. And he just looks up at Al. He's like, what?
Cut to credits.
And it cuts immediately to credits. Like, that was...
It's so good.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
So much respect for that ending. I thought that was really funny. And
yeah. And it ends ultimately on a redemptive note. You know, I guess we're led to believe that Birdie is cured in some way.
Yeah.
Even though he's still a weird dude, which was, I thought that was cool. Like, it made sense for his character even. Like, he finally speaks at the end of the movie. Birdie talks to Al at the end of the movie, and he's all excited he's cured, and the doctor comes in, and Al's trying to get Birdie to prove to the doctor that he's cured to say something, and the doctor leaves thinking that Al's lying. So Al yells at Birdie. He's like, why didn't you talk? Why didn't you say anything? And Birdie says, well, I didn't have anything to say to him. And that was awesome. It was funny. But it also fit his character so well. From the flashbacks we see as a kid, that's just the type of person he was. If he didn't have anything to say, he wouldn't talk.
Yeah.
Like, we get that when they go to Atlantic City.
Yeah.
And he's telling him, like, oh, you just have to lie to people and pretend you're interested and stuff. Which was cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and I loved the scenes of just Cage and Birdie hanging out. I thought that when they were in Atlantic City, they were hanging out with those two girls. I thought it was really funny. Mm-hmm. Cage in this movie doesn't go like full like crazy Cage a lot of the time, but he has a couple of like funny line readings and stuff like that. But there's certain one of my notes that I have down is that Cage is very much a boob man.
Because, yes, apparently. Super into boobs.
Because even in the beginning of the movie, he's, like, making out with this girl, and his little brother comes up to, call him. And,
yeah,
like, Cage has his hand, like, up her shirt, and, like, his brother comes up, and Cage is, like, latched on.
Yeah, just won't let go.
He will not let go. And he's, like, talking to his brother, and, like, the girl's, like, trying to push him down, and he's, like, not moving at all for, like, a straight minute. Like, a really long time.
It's really awkward and weird.
And actually, Cage's, when the brother interrupts, he's like, hey, Al, Cage's reading of the line where he has, like, what? Yeah. Was amazing. He was, like, really pissed off. Then there's the other scene with the two girls in Atlantic City, and, like, Cage with one, Birdie's with another.
Mm.
And Birdie's, like, talking to, like, one of the other, like, the one girl, and, like, right in front of them, Cage is going at it with this girl. I'm pretty sure they never had sex.
It starts with a close-up of Birdie and the girl talking, and you hear, like, some moaning. You're like, we get what's going on, and then it just pulls back to, like, a medium shot, and they're right next to them. It's amazing. So that was weird.
Yeah.
But then this thinking of, well, I guess like it's, I don't know if it's, we'll save it for the Cage section, but Cage's reading of another line when Birdie's explaining the dream sequence to him, like after prom, and he's telling him.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, you flew.
Yeah.
How you flew.
Like, what? Like, I don't understand why they didn't like, no, we're going to do another take. Like, why? Let's pick that one.
Yeah, no, I thought that was, I thought that was a pretty good reading. Like, I thought it was really funny, but it felt like, sort of like a mocking sort of tone, I guess. Like,
yeah, I guess, yeah.
Or just sort of, like, enthused, because he thought his friend got laid, and so he was like, oh,
yeah. Yeah, basically, he's, it just, it seemed like Nicolas Cage, not Al. Reading that line to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think Cage gives a really good performance, and there's like hints of like cageness throughout, but it's not like the typical screaming, crazy Cage performance. There are several different kinds of Cages, I think, that we will be exploring throughout this podcast.
He has a wide range of insanity. So.
Yeah, exactly. Although this time, the insane person is not him.
It's not Cage. You're right.
It's not Cage. So there's that. Analysis.
Analysis. Beautiful, Mike.
Is there anything else in this movie that you want to talk about? I mean, there was... scenes that you thought were funny or scenes that you thought were poignant in some way?
I don't know. This, for some reason, this movie didn't strike the analysis for me. I don't know. It was just kind of like I was watching it, and it was awesome. It was a good movie, and I enjoyed it. But there, it didn't do anything crazy or unique outside of that flying sequence that we've talked about.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think I like this movie quite a bit, but it is relatively straightforward, like PTSD drama. I think it's a relatively unique one in that you don't see a ton of PTSD dramas that are about a guy who wishes to be a bird.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. What did you think of Birdie's flying machine? I thought that was really interesting.
That was awesome. And it's like, seemed to be working for a minute there.
Yeah.
And he crashes into the puddle at the dump.
Yeah, but like the fact that he was able to make that, I think, shows that Birdie's actually a really smart guy.
Right, absolutely, yeah. It shows even when he's giving his presentation in class, Birdie has that little model flying machine thing flying around class. And it shows that he knows what he's talking about in some way. Like you said, he's a smart guy. He knows what he's doing and understands what it takes to fly in some kind of philosophical sense. Yeah. And thinks he can do it.
Yes, definitely. And I think, at the beginning of this movie, I think, the relationship between Cage and Birdie, I think, felt a little rushed at the beginning. Just cause they were like they meet for the first time and they're like in this fight. Try to get his brother's knife back. And then, like, as soon as that's over, they're, like, best friends.
Right. Yeah, like, it didn't really make sense.
I mean, I guess you're to assume that, like, some time has passed, but I feel like I didn't see, like,
we didn't get the progression of that. Next thing we know, they're climbing up under the elevated subway to get pigeons.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, I think the next flashback, that's what it is.
Yes. I did think the bird costume was pretty funny.
Yes.
Because the way it was introduced, like, I thought Birdie was, like, a legit psychopath. Like,
when he's in the pigeon coop and he, like, comes out from behind the thing and he's in the bird costume.
Yeah, and he's, like, making one for Cage and Cage Simpson's like, what's that, Birdie? And it's like, it's a bird costume, Al. I'm making it for you.
That's the serial killer version of
Birdie. Yeah, it was just, like, this movie could have easily gone a different direction if it chose to.
Yeah, definitely.
But that did also result in a really funny scene where after Birdie tries to fly in the bird costume, he, like, falls to the ground, gets hurt, and they're in the hospital, and Cage is talking to, like, a woman who's, like, sitting there. And he's
in the waiting room.
And he's in his bird costume, and he's just, like, just talking, making conversations, like, oh, he thought he could fly.
He thinks he's a bird. Crazy. Yeah. And she, like, gives him, like, this weird look.
Yeah, like the side eye.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so I guess to this movie's credit for all of its dark PTSD psyche delving drama, it is pretty lighthearted for a lot of the movie.
And a lot of the time, yeah. At least for the first half. I think, what did you think of the Vietnam flashbacks? Because there was a couple scenes where they, like, flash back to Cage's time in the war and Birdie's time in the war. And they didn't last long, but they were,
like, no.
They're given as, like, context.
It's kind of ironic, I guess. I mean, I don't know if that's part of the thing of Birdie's breakdown. His helicopter crashed, and then he, you know, had his snap or whatever.
Right.
So, like, he was flying, like, literally in a helicopter, and it crashed, and he was no longer flying, and that was it for him. So I thought that was kind of cool that it sort of explained his break, because we know Al's character was physically injured, but from what we see of Birdie in the mental hospital, he's not physically injured at that point, at least.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
So I thought that was an interesting way to show, you know, how the two ways that war can hurt somebody. It's not only physically, like, you know, Cage's face is all got blown up or whatever's going on. He's got the bandages.
Yeah. I did like how Cage was still, like you could tell that the war had taken a toll on him with the bandages and stuff, but he was still, like, cracking jokes. You know,
right.
He was, like, trying to make the best of it. I thought that was an interesting take on his character.
Yeah.
And you could see, like, how tough it is on him in certain scenes towards the end, like, with his relationship with the nurse.
Right.
But you know, I think like at the beginning of the movie, he has all the bandages on and he's like, oh, what do you think? And Cage's like, oh, I look like the Invisible Man.
Right. Yeah. And he's messing around with the girl on the train and he's like saying boo and stuff.
Yeah.
So it seems that he, or at least putting up a front that it doesn't bother him for the first half.
But the more he talks to Birdie, it seems like the more that comes out. Yeah,
so that was cool.
Yeah. So I think let's talk about Cage in the movie a little bit more. I mean, we've been talking about him throughout because he's kind of the lead of the movie. But the
main character, yeah.
But, I mean, how do you think this fits into the Cage that we've seen in previous films up to this point?
It definitely seems to be the most refined Nick Cage performance that we've seen so far.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
Well, like we've said before, we've been saying that up until Racing with the Moon, or I can never remember the name of that, actually. Is it Racing with the Moon?
Yeah, Racing with the Moon.
Racing with the Moon. Okay, I always think running with the, running from, whatever.
running from the moon.
Yeah. I can never get it right.
The moon is coming. And we have to run from it. That's
the Moonraker prequel.
That's Nicolas Cage's 2015 output, actually. Not.
Oh my god.
Boom.
Nailed it. call his agent. but up until that film, up until Racing with the Moon, he had been the side background character, you know, in Rumblefish. He was really important, but he's only in it for maybe 10 minutes or so actually on screen. And this, he's carrying the movie for the whole, you know, for half the movie. I mean, he's the main character for half, at least.
Yeah.
So there's more on his shoulders, I think, for that role. And he does a good job with it. He doesn't, you know, sometimes you see an actor who, typically a supporting actor and they get a lead role and you're like, eh, it's not your time yet. You should still be, you're still a supporting guy.
Yeah.
And in this, that wasn't the case for this.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think with Race with the Moon is the most comparable movie just in terms of, like, the plot and in terms of, like, Cage's role in it, because he is, like, a co-lead in that movie, too. I think he has a lot more to do in this movie than he does in Racing with the Moon. Because Racing with the Moon has, like, long stretches where it's just focused on Sean Penn.
Yeah.
But I think this is, like, Valley Girl he's also the co-lead of as well. Yeah. So far, I mean, it's continued the streak of every movie we've reviewed except for The Cotton Club has been Nicolas Cage in high school.
And also directly ties into his performance in Best of Times.
Yeah. Yeah, that Best of Times is never going to go away.
Never, never. Yeah. It's a touchstone for us.
Yeah. I mean, it was the best.
God.
Of times.
You're the worst. I think that this shows Cage's we were talking before we started, we're kind of ramping up towards his Oscar performance at this point.
Well, I mean, that's still a little while away. Leaving Las Vegas was 95. We're still in 84.
Well, that was that late? I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. I'm very excited for that stretch of movies, because the three movies he made after Leaving Las Vegas were The Rock, Con Air, and Face Off, like in a row.
Like so in a row, he was robbed of Oscars for all three of those films.
but we are coming up to a point where we're getting more well known Nicolas Cage movies. So after this, it's The Boy in Blue, which isn't that well known. But then after that, it's Peggy Sue Got Married, which is pretty popular. Raising Arizona, which I'm very excited to talk about. And then Moonstruck is going to be coming up. The David Lynch movie Wild at Heart is going to be on its way at some point soon. So we are getting up to, like, peak early Cage, I think. But I think Birdie's...
Before he lost it.
Whoa, man. Cage never lost it, man.
Whoa.
He may have started taking movies that were below his standards.
Yeah, he came down to them.
But he's always great. Like, he's... You know, he can
just whatever you need to tell yourself, Mike. It's fine.
He can sleepwalk through a performance, but even when he does, like, there's always the chance that something awesome's going to happen.
Yeah,
That's why we're doing this podcast.
He's like a live wire. You never know what's going to happen.
Exactly. And that's you know, why we love Cage. That's why we're doing this podcast.
Sure. We are ramping up towards that, you know, peak of Raising Arizona and, you know, awesome, where he was at the peak of his dramatic ability, I guess you could say.
Yeah, well, Raising Arizona is a comedy, but...
Well, you know what I mean. Well, acting ability. That's boom. What I mean. Okay,
yeah, I mean, I think the mid-90s is, like,
yeah,
prime Cage, because that's when Leaving Las Vegas came out, but then there's also, like, the three, like, biggest Cage action movies came out, like, in a row, like, which is pretty cool. And then, you know, well, I think we're going to have a lot of fun talking about the later half of his career as well. But I think for now, I think Birdie was very good. Cage was very good in it.
Yes.
You know, and I think as it ties into the rest of his films, it's, I think, arguably his best performance yet. I'm not sure I would say it's better than Racing with the Moon, which I think is probably the best we've seen so far. But yeah. he is very good in Birdie. So, I mean, where does Birdie rank for you in terms of the movies we watched so far?
In terms of overall movies?
I mean, movies we've watched for this podcast so far, not movies you've watched in your entire life.
No, I know. And then... In terms of Cage specific performance, it's probably number one. Okay. But my favorite movie that we've watched so far is still Rumblefish.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up. You know, we've talked about Birdie and we've talked about Cage. So I think we can call it a day. Where can we find you online this week, Mike?
Find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog.
And you can find me at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog as well as filmbook.com, where you can see all of our various podcasts and whatnot. Thank you for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. This is Mike DiCruscio. If you're listening to this review of our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, top discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. That's FILM-BOOK. That dash is really a killer. But yeah, please list the podcast you're talking about. We produce so many different ones, it's hard to keep track. We'd love to hear from you. Now join us in 2 weeks, where we'll be discussing another Nicolas Cage in the sculling drama, The Boy in Blue. If you're not aware of what sculling is, it's rowing.
The more you know.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage starred in a rowing movie, so that should be interesting. And check out this week's film bookcast, where Mike and I will be reviewing something.
The Martian, duh, obviously.
All right, so, well, The Martian will come out next weekend. Not, like, this... Yeah, okay, so...
Well... If you put this out after this weekend, that would be the
fair enough. All right, so.
Week of Complete Works, and then we can see The Martian, and then the week after that will be the week of The Martian review. That's how days work, Mike.
Yeah, you are right. So, all right, so I guess we'll be reviewing The Martian next time. So, thank you so much for listening, guys, and we are out.